Hello, and welcome to the West of North London podcast, where we sit down each and every week and answer your big Arsenal questions. I'm Tim.
And I'm not Caleb.
I know. Who is it?
I am Jonathan.
Thank you so much, Jonathan, for filling in for Caleb this week. He's off in Montana, I believe, and is off the grid. So it's great to have you, to have your perspective. So yeah, I'm very excited to have this conversation with you this week.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's good to be here.
Yeah, and so the first big question we have for this week is, what's your drink of the week? What are you having?
So I planned. I work sometimes in the beer section at the PCC in Seattle. Sometimes, and I was planning. I like scoped the aisle, wanted to get something. Completely forgot until I got around the corner from my house. So I stopped by my corner store, the A1. It's a pretty great place. It has lots of weird stuff that I've never heard of before, like this Manticore's Manifest.
That sounds amazing.
For anybody who's watching the YouTube, this can is frightening.
I want that can tattooed on my body.
Right?
I love that can.
It is a collab from Abomination Brewing and Spartacus Brewing. I actually don't know where those are. I'm assuming somewhere in Ballard because they're all in Ballard. Oh, no. Excuse me. This one's from Connecticut.
Wow. That seems far away.
Oh, yeah. It is far away. I thought that... Okay, anyway. It was in the wrong section of the A1 then. It is triple dry hopped, triple India Pale Ale. They use Citra, Nelson Sauvin, and Racal. And then they threw some Phantasm powder in there. So...
Wow, that's a lot of hops.
That's it's also 10%. So, yeehaw.
Woof. Yeah, we'll be slurring by the end of the episode.
Yeah, I also have a hot toddy here because of the throat. Wow, it is very good. It's very smooth. I guess I'm just used to North. Oh, there's the Phantasm powder. Wow, tingly. Okay, cool. I guess I'm just used to Northwest IPAs now. The hops are very soft. It's not very hop forward. I thought that since there was all that hops and it's triple dry hopped that it would be more in your face, but it's not. It's really smooth, and then the Phantasm powder came way late and just makes your tongue all tingly.
I mean, what are your general thoughts about like double IPAs and then like moving on to triple IPAs, like
I think it's kind of funny because it feels like just one-upmanship, especially in the Northwest where we are, where like just every brewery is like you all have IPAs. I have a double IPA, and now there's triple IPAs, and it feels like a Christmas Carol or a Christmas Story, with like the triple dog dare you, like just skip in straight to it. but yeah,
is it drinkable? Like, would you recommend it? Like, would you buy it again?
Oh yeah, I would definitely. It's like more sweet. Especially than I was expecting. And yeah, it does not taste like it's 10% alcohol. This is dangerous.
Yeah, that is a dangerous.
It tastes, with the Phantasm powder, it just tastes like it tastes a lot like a hazy IPA.
Yeah, yeah, I could see that.
I should have poured it so I knew what it looked like. But
yeah, I imagine like adding the Phantasm powder is like having a hazy where you're going to have a lot of stuff in suspension.
Yeah. Anyway, what are you drinking?
Well, speaking of hazies, I have a hazy from the brewery I work at, which is Menace Brewing, and this is the Vicious Delicious, named after a Infected Mushroom album. And it's a pretty good hazy. I am going to drink it now. It's off my kegerator, so it's fresh and nice. Yeah, it's good. Like, I'm not generally an IPA person. I'm generally not a hazy IPA person, but it's fine. It's nice. Like, it's interesting because they use a Kvike yeast for it, which is a very, I could go down a very nerdy yeast rabbit hole that we don't need to go. One of these days, I should start a podcast about beer brewing. But it creates a nice clean finish, super fruity. The flavor I get, which I've been having a discussion with the brewers because they don't believe me, but the flavor I get out of it is like artificial strawberry.
Okay.
And yeah, so it has like a very fruity flavor with no fruit added to it. Interesting. It's a fun beer. Comes in at like 6.4%, so it's not too crazy, but still, yeah, we get you where you're going.
Yeah. That's actually usually where I like stop freaking out. Like I'm not like around 6%, right? It's like, oh yeah, that's strong, but not like that's where I usually like top out. That's
what yeah, exactly.
This 10%, I was like, oh, well, why not? Can't school.
Yeah, I had that last week where my friend gave me a beer and I cracked it for this segment, and then I looked at the percentage and I'm like, oh yeah, 9.4. Okay, hopefully I make it through the episode.
Yeah, it seemed okay. Yeah. You made it.
Yeah, we made it. I don't think I slurred too much. So moving on from the beers of the week, we got the Timbit, which normally Caleb introduces, but I'll introduce myself with my own Timbit, which is we have a game against Southampton coming up. And the one thing I know about Southampton, the fun fact I know, is it's where the Titanic sailed from.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah, yeah, it's my little fun fact about Southampton. And so my question to you is, if you could learn a lesson from the Titanic for Arsenal, what would it be?
Wow. Okay. So there's two, right? So there is like the end of the Wenger era, where it's like all this excitement and all this positivity around this great thing that's going to set forward, and it's the biggest thing around. It's going to be the best thing because it's the biggest thing, because it's invincible. And of course there's something coming that would derail the whole thing and show that the whole thing was hubris, right? And I think that is like what maybe a lot of Arsenal fans felt. I mean, certainly I did, with the end of Arsene Wenger and then bringing in Emery, and then the beginning, besides the FA Cup, the beginning of the Arteta era. Like it's kind of like a correlation. And maybe we should have learned this lesson a long time ago. that we're being too hasty, too proud, too full of ourselves. I mean, I remember even in like 2010 thinking, yeah, it's Arsenal and it's Manchester United, and that's it. Those are the only two teams. Like Liverpool is gone. Chelsea bought, like they use their money, but they can't be going too strong for much longer. And the only teams that are gonna matter going forward, United and Arsenal. And we might be wrong. Or you could be forward thinking and more positive and think and look at the big shiny teams sailing across, like the Manchester Cities, the Chelsea's, the
Chelsea specifically right now.
Hopefully the Newcastles, right? Who have spent all this money, have this big shiny new toy that are going to come across, and they are totally underestimating this thing that it looks pretty big on the surface, but it's even bigger underneath. That's gonna just derail the whole thing. And maybe instead of the Titanic, maybe the Arsenal is the iceberg. And
ooh,
maybe we just have to look beneath the surface, and maybe we can derail all those big money spending teams.
You know? I love that twist you just put on that. Yeah. By the way, that just made my brain like laugh with joy.
Yeah, we'll see.
Yeah, I have nothing to add. I think both those are good takes on that. Like, either we are the Titanic and we should not have had the hubris, and maybe we're getting past the iceberg. That's how it works with the Titanic, right? They get past the iceberg and it works.
Yeah, that's exactly what happened. Yeah, they passed the iceberg because they were like, yeah, we need to steer clear of this thing because it is bigger than us. Not, yeah.
Or I like the second thing where we are the iceberg. I actually really like that right now. So I'm gonna go with we are the iceberg.
Yeah, let's make a TIFO. Everyone will understand.
Yeah, just a giant iceberg, and everyone will totally understand.
Yeah, of course.
Well, like we've been joking, laughing, talking about beer, but I think we have to kind of go to the last game, which is the Brighton game, which, I didn't get to talk to you before the Brighton game. I usually talk to Caleb, and we were pretty confident going in
Yeah.
general.
were you?
I was pretty confident going in that we would, it was at home and against a team that I didn't think a point was unreasonable,
Okay. Okay.
and
Yeah. So yeah, I mean, I rate Brighton, and we'll get to this later, but I actually rate Southampton kind of along these lines as like a team that doesn't have it together, but is always dangerous. They're well coached, they have decent players, but their coaching gets the most out of their players. And I find those kinds of games, the games against, I mean, mostly those two actually. Those are the ones that kind of scare me the most because we should win them. I think if you looked at the betting odds, like we should have won that game. Not even just tied that game. And but because of the way they play and the way we play, I think they stack up pretty well against us in general. Like they have historically, and they do the way we play and the way they play now. So I wasn't super confident. I did think we were gonna come out better than we did, but.
So, but I mean, like going into the game, did you think we were going to lose the game?
I thought it was a stronger possibility than people were letting were seemed like they believed.
Yeah, it's fair enough. Like, I mean, I have a lot of time for Graham Potter. Like, he coached the Swedish team in the Swedish league, and out like if you know the Swedish league, Östersund was a team that like came about like 7 years ago, and he coached them to be in the Champions League, in which we've lost to them before.
Oh,
In
yeah, we did.
yeah,
Yeah.
and so he has an ability to coach up. Like he like I have a lot of time for Graham Potter, but how do I like? It's a game that like I understand is a slippery banana, and like every game in the Premier League, I feel like is a game that we could lose, but it's a game we should win, if that makes sense. Like I feel on paper with the players we have versus the players they have, it's not unquestionable that we win that game. It's not a stretch that we should expect a point out of that game, and that's where I was going with that game.
Well, I think, yeah, on paper we like if you just look at the players, but that's how Brighton plays. It has been playing for the last 2 years. Is they play up? They you I can't tell you who anybody on that team besides Danny Welbeck is. I have no idea who their goalkeeper is. I don't know who any of their like I don't know who any of their players are. And yet I have enough faith in the system that they have going on there after watching them these last 2 years, which I mean admittedly isn't that much because I don't know their players' names, but I mean just seeing the way they play when I watch them play and seeing their results, they it doesn't necessarily match up. And like they're like Arsenal were like maybe 5 6 years ago, where we would just dominate games and then like just like yeah like dominate possession, dominate chances, but then just have Danny Welbeck miss all the chances that we create, you know? Like, yeah. Like they're the same team that we used to be, you know? Yeah. And I think that in the same way that I think Arsenal are headed in the right direction, I think they're headed in the right direction. They have a very strong style of play, and it's a very good style of play, and they're like Arsenal, one player away from like being a really good team. I don't think they're as close as we are, and I don't think they have the same ceiling as we do, but because of the way they're coached, their floor is very high.
Yeah, I mean, I think you know, two names that you would get out of Brighton are Bissouma and Trossard. I think are fairly you know, known-ish, but it, like other than that, it's not, you know. Oh, and Dunk. I forgot about Dunk.
But yeah, yeah, that was hyperbole. Like, I do, like, now that you've said them, like, I was like, oh yeah, those guys play there. Yeah, but
it's not team or players that you would you know, necessarily be shaking in your boots when you see them.
Yeah.
On the lineup, but like, I do agree with you that, you know, the way that Potter has really coach these teams, this is what he does, you know, is he takes these players and makes them better than what you would say. On the other side, what do you think about the starting lineup for Arsenal? Would you
So let's see, the notes I had from the game just seeing it the first time was this sucks for Tavares, but we'll get to that because I think there's a question about that. So I won't go too far into that. This sucks for Tavares, especially compared to Cedric. That was the first note I wrote. And I was thinking about the game before, the Crystal Palace game, and how Zaha just ran like actual circles around Cedric.
Yeah.
And Tavares had a bad game too. Like, they both had terrible games, but Cedric was just god awful, especially in the first half of that Crystal Palace game, and he keeps his spot. You know, I get that we don't really, like, we could move White out and put Holding in there. Like, we don't really have, if without Tomiyasu, we don't have the depth really to change that. But he was so bad in that game, and that has got to feel bad when you're Tavares, when you're looking across the field and you're seeing this guy just get completely obliterated and you're the one who gets the hook, you know?
Yeah. I mean, like, yeah, sorry, continue.
No, that's all I had for that point. I just had more notes. Our mid looks vulnerable.
Mm-hmm.
Question mark, maybe. It looked like it was at the end of the game, but at the beginning of the game, I said our midfield looks kind of vulnerable. It looks like we're trying something new, but we need to try something new. And I was thinking mostly about depth, because if Partey's out, and Lokonga is not the answer, then we need to try other things. So,
well, I mean, I think when I look at that like starting lineup, I think of the deal we made with the devil in our December window, which is that we don't have any depth. We don't have depth for Tierney. We don't have depth really for Tomiyasu. We don't have depth for Partey, really. And this is, you know, kind of when all those players are injured, this is what you get.
Yeah, I would say, I mean, in most games, actually, and actually in this game, I know I just ranted about Cedric. In this game, I would expect Cedric to do fine. It was actually, I was actually took like a lot of, again, I don't want to get too far into it because we have a question about it later, but our fullbacks against Crystal Palace are going to be put under a lot of pressure because of who Crystal Palace has in their wings and the way Crystal Palace plays. The way Brighton plays, I would expect Cedric and Tavares to be under a lot less pressure and maybe be able to get start fresh, you know? Like expel those ghosts or exorcise those ghosts that they had against Crystal Palace. And I think that they need to do that as backups because they're not going to get a lot of opportunity. Then that's to your point that we don't have backups in those positions. And same thing with Lokonga, like he is the understudy. Tavares is the understudy. Cedric is not the understudy. He's the backup because he's like experienced and or whatever
Totally.
experienced with quotes. We let people go, but we had the like for like backups in those spots, and now it's time to use them, and it looks like they're not as good as we thought they were, or they had bad games.
I mean,
That too.
do you think it was a straight up mistake to not start Tavares?
In a game like in a one or in, just thinking about the two games, a case could be made. I don't know how Tavares looked in training that week. I don't know what conversations that they had. I'm trusting that Arteta, the kind of manager that he is, had a conversation with Tavares and said and not only told him what the deal was, but also went in and gauged how he was feeling about what was a very bad game against Crystal Palace and what he felt, because that's part of his job is like you're not going to play 100% if you're not feeling 100%, even if you're physically 100%, if your mentality is not there. So he has to gauge that, and so he has to like go to Tavares and ask him what's up, man. Like he doesn't talk like that. He's Spanish and like sophisticated, but like, hey, dude, what's going on? Like, are you okay to do this? And I'm trusting Arteta. I'm trusting that Arteta, did his due diligence there, because he kind of has to. I mean, from what like Sané said about him at City and other players have said about him while he was at City, I believe he's that kind of coach. But going forward, it seems like it's bad for Tavares. So for the two games, just how he played against Palace and then going into the beginning of the Brighton game, it might have been a good choice. But going forward, I don't know if that's good for his development, and we need him to develop, especially if Tierney's out until like June or whatever.
Yeah, which is unfortunate, very, very
So
much
bad.
so. Oh, so bad. But like, moving on from the how the lineups go, like how did you feel the first part of the game went? Like, how did you feel the game started?
Yeah, I don't think it started terrible. I mean, Welbeck did almost get in like in the first minute, and I was like, "Wow, that would
Where
have
was
sucked.
that?
I would have hated that." Like, because I don't know. I feel like I'm always like the fan of the maligned Arsenal players, you know. And I feel like Welbeck got a lot of shit when he was at Arsenal. Not probably not as much shit as I mean, like people did not like Welbeck when he was at Arsenal, but I think more people didn't like him when he was at United.
Yeah.
But I thought like for a depth signing, Welbeck was great. Like I don't think he was ever going to be our marquee striker, and I don't think
Sure.
he had any illusions that he was going to be, and I don't think we tried to use him as that. But coming off the bench to change something up, I thought he was great. And I think he's doing great at Brighton. I think they need somebody else, somebody who's more of the man. But you know,
Yeah.
I still would have just daggers to the heart if he scored in the first minute. Would have been terrible.
Yeah.
But besides that, I think we played pretty good. I mean, like this game wasn't. I'm going to keep on going back to the Crystal Palace game because I wasn't on the podcast last week and I didn't get to talk about it. But
Please do.
we got eviscerated
Oh.
by Palace,
Horribly eviscerated.
and I mean, I already said I think most of that is because our both of our fullbacks just failed. Zaha was having the time of his life.
Yeah. that left side, right side, I forget which side it was, but it was
their left side, our right side.
Yeah. Was just absolutely run over for that Palace game.
Yeah. But this game, I think that we came out okay. We didn't look as good as we could. I don't think we even looked as good as we looked against like the first half against Liverpool or the first half against Manchester City when we just like pressed them, you know. I think we've played much better before, but I don't think we played poorly for the first, when did they score? First 25 minutes.
Look at you in your notes.
Oh, 28 minutes, excuse me.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think it's the 28th, but I wasn't going to correct you.
Yeah. I don't engage a lot in like Arsenal Twitter or a lot of social media because I find that a lot of people, it's frustrating for me because a lot of people just don't know what they're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And so I end up engaging with people and then they argue with me and I'm like, oh, this is dumb. but I do like kind of like lurk a little bit. And I see a lot of people get like really mad when Arsenal don't come out like guns blazing, like they did against like some bigger teams and like kind of surprise people. And I think that a lot of people just don't consider what the other team is doing.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I think Brighton is, like I've said, is a very good team that is coached very well. So we're not going to run over them because they hold their shape and they play in a fashion consistently that the way that we usually play is not going to really work against them.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting, like you mentioned that because I'm a little loath to say it. I'm a little embarrassed to say it, but there's a documentary, I believe it was on Netflix, it could have been on Amazon Prime, where they were talking about coaches and or talking to coaches, and one of them was interviewing Jose Mourinho, which I dislike as a human being.
Yeah, fuck that guy. But yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, forget that guy.
Sorry. Yeah. And we're allowed to cuss. We can say fuck shit, everything you want to say on this podcast. One of the things he said is like managing phases of the game that like if you can't be 100% 100% of the game. So you have to take a look at the game and look when you want to attack. And I think it's not a horrible idea, especially with the way you look at how Arsenal sets up, that you spend the first 20 minutes of the game just holding the game down, making sure they don't score, and then spending, you know, your chips, spending your tokens to attack at certain points when you think the other team's going to be weak, when you think the other team's going to be, you know, vulnerable. So, you know, not going out, because the thing is, too, is if you go out guns blazing, score a goal in the first 10 minutes, then you have 90 minutes to defend that lead. And I don't think Arsenal's an 80 minute defensive team. So, like, you gotta spend your chips when you should.
Yeah. I do think, yeah, that's a very good point. And actually, I think Brighton did that. I don't think Brighton usually does this. Mm-hmm. Actually, I did talk them up a bunch at the top, but that is something I think Brighton doesn't excel at is doing what Mourinho was talking about there, is in that when you're bad, don't be as bad, and when you have an opportunity, you have to take it.
Yeah,
like that's basically what he's saying. And and Brighton, given their place in the table, don't take their chances. And that's not just about like scoring chances. It's about like when the other team, like they're not ruthless in the way that like Mourinho teams were,
mm-hmm.
Or in the way that, you know, like Liverpool and City are. But this game, I think they did, like their first goal. I think it was really unlucky that's because we were pressing, right? We're trying to keep them from passing out of the back. And I think it was Dunk who was being pressured by Lacazette. and he just clears it. He's looking for Brighton players, but that was not his plan. His plan was, oh shit, Laka is right in my face. I have to get this out of here. And it just happened that when he hit it, then Xhaka was way out of position, and that let somebody run in and then cut back, and then that midfield runner just was able to score.
Sorry, go ahead.
It started off good. The pressure was good. The pressure was right. That's what you're supposed to do there. And just one person out of position it killed us.
I was looking. I've watched that replay of that goal like more times than I want to admit. And I'm trying to figure out why and how and where that much space opened up for us. It wasn't a goalkeeper error or anything like that. It was just like Tassard had so much space.
Yeah. So it starts with the pressure, right? So everybody's trying to move forward. So that's the beginning of the goal. Is we are pressing them and the pressing is working. So we're on the front foot. So when Xhaka goes too far on the front foot, then that means everybody else has to switch momentum and go back. And so that just keeps us a step behind for what comes next, because their winger gets to run forward where Xhaka should be and covering him, and he's not. So that means that the center back has to go out to cover. So Gabby goes out to cover, and that just kills our shape, because then everybody is shifting reactively to cover up where everybody else is going, because one person was out of position, which is Xhaka. So Xhaka goes too far forward, so he's running back. He's never going to catch up. What's his name? Kyle Walker. Kyle Walker. He's never going to catch up. He's not fast. Right? Kyle Walker is always out of position. He's never in position, but he always makes up for it because he's stupid fast. So Gabriel has to go out and get it, which means that Lokonga has to come inside. But that means that when they do the cutback, then Lokonga is not tracking that run at the top of the box. And that's the space right there.
Yeah, and I know we have a question about Xhaka as a right back, but that it might be the answer to the question in a certain extent.
Yeah, I mean, that is a little harsh. One moment in a game, even if it leads to a goal, like you got to, like I think. I need to collect my thoughts a second. Like, soccer is not like baseball. Baseball, you can play Moneyball, and it's all just numbers. Yeah. Basketball, too. There's so many times that you go up and down the court that you can say, just shoot threes, and eventually you'll make it on top. Soccer is not that game. You can't break it down to an algorithm because there's too much stuff happening. And the chances are too far apart. That the law of averages can't, you don't have enough chances to make the law of averages work for you. So on one hand, that's a bad example. Like, you can't say because of one time he didn't track, or he was out of position. One time he was out of position, so he can't play there ever again. That's very harsh. But at the same time, that one time led to a goal. So it is kind of, it's, I mean, like,
well, and we're going to talk about this quite a bit in the second half of the show, so I'm just going to make a smooth transition, which is talking about laws of averages. It feels, doesn't it, like our interactions with referees and VAR goes against the laws of averages. And I bring this up because the next really interesting part of the game was the Martinelli goal that was taken away. What are your thoughts? Like, I don't want to talk about, I never want to talk too much about VAR because I'm bored about this conversation, but it seems to come up all the time.
Okay. So you don't know what, nobody knows where I live, so you can't find me. Martinelli was offside.
Would you bet your life on that?
I kind of am. his foot. Okay, so to be offsides, you have to be behind the second to last defender.
Correct.
Right?
Correct.
So he is not behind the goalkeeper, I don't think. I think that...
That was a squishy word you just used there, by the way. I don't behind. Think.
I don't think. But he is definitely behind... what's his name? The guy who should have got sent off. Cucurella.
Yes.
Cucurella. Cucurella is it's a doble.
Because
he is definitely but the way the Premier League has written VAR rules is if it's clear and obvious, and I think that's a sticky way to put it, and I think they need to change it because it wasn't clear and obvious. You have to go to three angles and you have to guess based off the other two angles where he is in the third angle that shows where Martinelli is. And I think when you have to do that much work, it's no longer clear and obvious. I think that if you had x-ray vision and you could see behind the goalkeeper, you would see that Martinelli is offside.
I kind of agree with you in that like I have a feeling looking at all the angles, and I've looked at, as everyone probably listening to this podcast has, looked at all the angles, looked at everything, rehashed in your mind, dreamt about it, had nightmares about it. But as far as clear and obvious, it's not clear and obvious. And it's not like, and the goal was given.
Yeah.
And that
so
was.
So in order to overturn, it has to be clear and obvious, and it's not clear and obvious. So why is it overturned? Is it because it's Arsenal? Is it?
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, I the thing is, like, I try and be very understanding about these things. And I go, like, these things, you get the rub of the green. Sometimes it goes for you. Sometimes it goes against you. Whatever. But more and more, I've just been feeling like we haven't been getting those calls, and those calls get called against us. Like, this is an obvious thing. I mean, it's clear and obvious that it wasn't clear and obvious to throw it out there. And like, I get that, like, all the referees are looking at it. Like, I actually saw the picture of them trying to draw that line and it's absurd. And so if a referee and the linesman or linesperson are giving it as a goal, you can't call that back. Like, you can't say that was uncontroversial proof, clear and obvious, that the referee and the Lions person made a mistake.
Yeah, I agree with that. I don't think I agree with that just because it's Arsenal. I definitely agree with it because it's Arsenal. But I think that this kind of gets into the Premier League, I think, has... Like, I think the level of the Premier League is really good. I think that the parity for the Premier League, except for the top two, is really good. I enjoy the style of play that most teams play. And if I turn on any Premier League game, I'll usually be entertained enough. And that's not the same in, like, especially like Italy or Spain, like or like even in Germany. I just don't.
Oh, I'll disagree with you about that, but. Continue.
I like a lot of teams. Like, I'll watch any Dortmund game, but anyway, I think the biggest failing of the Premier League is the officiating. I think, like, going back to you guys' conversation with Joe Robinson, there's not enough officials. Every game. Like, I know all the officials' names. Like, that shouldn't happen.
No, totally.
And it partly is because they are kind of prima donna-ish. They do things that make you notice them. But also, like, there's not that many. So, and then they have... The two things that get me this season, because there's something every season, is the VAR, the way VAR mm-hmm. is written, how it has to be a clear and obvious error to be overturned, that it makes it very confusing, and it takes away what VAR is supposed to do, which is make everything clear and direct.
Yeah.
Like it's supposed to take away any subjectiveness. But the way it is written, it is just as subjective.
Yeah, I mean, like I will say this, that I watch quite a bit of Bundesliga, and
yeah.
it's not implemented in the same way as it is in England,
yeah.
and it works. And the same way, like, I watch a ton of Swedish league, and I know you watch the Dutch league quite a bit, and I can imagine... Yeah. It's not the same. Like there's something about the Premier League where it's not working correctly. Because when a decision is made in the Swedish league, which is not a great league, and like the referee standard should probably be lower, the decisions are very much more easy to digest and correct. And I don't know how the Premier League doesn't have that.
Yeah. And I think it's just, I don't know. I don't have any answers. I'm not going to try and make up why they do it this way, except for a lot of things in England, they just do things because of tradition and the way it's been done.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they still have a queen. I mean,
so does the Netherlands, right?
Yeah, but... No, they have a king and he doesn't do anything. They don't have Buckingham Palace.
Yeah.
He just has a nice house. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's they just do things because that's the way it's been done, and they think that because that's the way it's been done, then that's the right way to do it. And I think especially with VAR, it's new technology that is coming in. So it can't be the way it's always been done. And you can't just say, oh, well, the referees always have done it. So, well, it's always like that's ridiculous. If you're going to put in VAR, then change the system.
I mean, this is going to be a hot take that's not on the outline. But do you think MLS does it better than the EPL?
Barely. I think MLS... based theirs, it seems like MLS based theirs off of the Premier League.
Yeah.
But even then, I think that the MLS refs are more willing to be wrong under video review.
100%.
I think it has to do with the way sports work in America, where like we've been watching review on basketball and baseball and football for years now.
Mm-hmm.
And soccer is not the biggest sport, and it's not the only thing with VAR, you know?
Yeah, totally.
There's other things that have had instant replay for a long time and trying to get the calls right. And so we have an example of how like it actually isn't a shot to your pride to be wrong on a call. Like it happens, you know?
Yeah.
But that does. Yeah. Yeah.
And yeah. And,
yeah,
I think, we're all in agreement that VAR needs some sort of fixing in this league. But, what else do you have to say about this game? I know there was a second goal. Do you have any other comments about this game?
I have so many comments about that. I think I did say there was two things about officiating that bugged me this year, and one of them is how the first thing is the way VAR is implemented. The second thing is the instruction to like kind of let play go on on like smaller ticky fouls. And I think that has really hurt players like, I don't know, maybe you would have heard of a young player, Sokka, yeah, where he's just like every game just getting taken out at the ankles. And I think that's terrible for a young developing player where like he can't play a certain way. And we've seen this happen before. We've seen it happen where players who are better than the like kind of brutish defenders in the Premier League just get kicked until they can't play anymore. Like we had Jack Wilshere, you know? We had who else did we have?
Santi.
We had Santi Cazorla. We had Flamini. Like I mean, pretty much every midfielder that Wenger signed, it falls under this that where they were technically fantastic and they were a joy to watch until somebody from Stoke like cleaned them out
I mean, I was just gonna say Diaby.
for the oh yeah Diaby yeah like how many times have those play those all those players been cleaned out by somebody from another from like I mean it just happens over and over again and I don't want to see it happen to Saka because he's such a good boy. He's like so pure. I don't
Such a
want
good
him
boy.
to suffer. I don't want him to suffer the same fate that like Wilshere is the one that hurts for me because Wilshere was like so ahead of his time and he could have changed the way England play like on the national team level and yet he just got no protection. And now like we have something from the top of officiating saying those little fouls, which end up not being little fouls because if you give them a little bit, then they're gonna take a little bit more. Those little fouls don't matter. So then he's just getting kicked all game long. And I have a few lists where like they ended up eventually getting yellow cards for them, but just all game
Well,
long.
you spread them
And I
around.
think
That's what you do, like if you know what you're doing, is you have three or four players that will kick them out until you get a yellow card and then it's the next person up. This is what you do.
yeah, and that's what they did. They cycled through it. But I think like Basuma fouled like around sometime in between the 33rd and the 37th minute. Basuma and Kukureya both just flattened Saka, and they weren't the first to do it. Basuma got a yellow. Kukureya didn't get a yellow. He later got a yellow, but it should have been his like third, so he should have been like I think he should have been sent off. And I just think that it the way the attitude towards it is England is like the best league in the world, but it's also the toughest league in the world. And I don't think that fouling away the careers of players like Saka is the way to do it.
Well, it
Like you can be have a tough league without that.
it's why I'm not shocked that there's a lot more younger English players leaving the Premier League. Like you have Jude Bellingham that's playing for Dortmund, because I think Germany, the Bundesliga, has a lot of the same qualities that the Premier League does. It's a little bit slower or whatever, but you don't have that brutality that you do have in the English league. And like this, like I mean, I think it's left over from the 1800s, the beginnings of soccer, which is like it was, you know, aristocratic crats playing war games, and that you should have a stiff upper lip and like take the damage that's happening to your ankles. And yeah, I mean, if I was an advisor to a young English player, I'd be like, go to Bundesliga, go somewhere else, then stay in the Premier League.
I mean, I think if you're good enough, I think it's harder to move around when there's established leagues. I think middling English players, it's harder for them to move to places like the Bundesliga than it is for them to stay.
I mean, they'll get more money in Premier League than they will ever get in the Bundesliga, and I think that's the hardest thing.
Yeah, it's a yeah.
Because there's a
that's,
but this is a larger conversation.
Yeah, yeah, just like and that it does the opposite of what they want. They want the league to be tougher, but instead, then people aren't gonna just like glaze over the small fouls. They're gonna do things like dive or ham up the little fouls that they get. I mean, just watch how Martinelli plays. Like every little thing that happens to him, he goes down.
Yeah.
And I'm not mad about it. You have to do it because otherwise you're not going to get a call.
100%. Like I when I watch it at the brewery where I work at, we put a lot of the games on and like people start like complaining about the diving, but I'm like, this guy is not going to get the call if he doesn't dive, if he doesn't, like, you look at what happens when someone kicks the ankle and they stay up, you're never going to get that call. Yeah. You're never going to get anything. Yeah. Like, it's crazy.
So either you go down easy, or you stay on your feet and you lose the ball because you got knocked, like, off, like, because you lost your footing.
Well, I mean,
because
it's not even losing the ball. You lose your career because your ankles are shot when you're, like, 30.
Yeah.
You know? Like,
yeah. That is one thing. And then on the other side of it, as far as Arsenal are concerned, I think that officials are really like biased.
Mm-hmm.
And since there are so few of them, that bias like has an effect. For example, most people think Granit Xhaka fouls people. And there were many times where like, and this game where he got a foul where it was like shoulder to shoulder.
Yeah.
And he, like, I think even his yellow card, somebody on Brighton did the exact same thing he did like right before, like 5 minutes before with no card. And it wasn't, the ref didn't indicate that it was persistence. It was just for that tackle, he got a yellow card. And I just think it's hard. I'm a big Xhaka supporter.
I'm an apologist. I say I'm a Xhaka apologist. That's where I am.
There we go. Yeah. I think he gets a worse rap than from refs than he deserves, and that like feeds into the like hot-headed Xhaka narrative.
Yeah,
and I just think it's harsh. It's really harsh.
Continue.
Yeah. No. You're good. I'm done with
that. No, because I see your point, because I was watching the Man City Atletico game on Paramount Plus after the game. They had a referee talking about like all the shenanigans that were happening during that game, and it was fun to watch because you know I don't have any ship in that game or whatever. But the referee was talking about that referees have conferences before the game. And they know what type of team, and this was about, Atletico being Atletico.
Yeah.
And that the referees are aware of that, and they talk about that, and they call the game with that in mind. Which, when they said that, I was a little bit shocked by that, because then I was thinking about, in an Arsenal context, they're talking about Arsenal, and they're talking about Xhaka, and they're like, when we had Luis talking about Luis.
Last year, they're like, these two.
And I'm like, I don't think that's a correct way to go into a game where you're already singling out players. And I feel like Xhaka has that. And I feel that the referees are looking for Xhaka to make those plays, which I do think is unfair. I think, I do understand that Xhaka is a difficult player. If you're a Sounders fan, like, I think you have a lot of analogies to, I'm totally blinking on his name, Cuban player, Ozzie Alonso.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
Which he is a tough player, but I don't think he's an unfair player. And I think that's the same with Xhaka. I think he's a tough player. I don't really think he deserves the amount of yellow and red cards that he gets.
Yeah, I mean, I think he definitely deserves at least half of them, but he is Yeah, he earns some of them, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying that he's perfect. He's not Sokka.
Yeah.
But but he gets more than his due. And I think Luis did too. I think you gotta like consider that when you're signing these kinds of players. And I think we should consider that when we're going forward.
I'm just
That's one of the things that I was worried about when we signed Luis, because even though I also like Luis, mostly because I enjoy all the floppy haired Arsenal players, but he has a target, not from other players, but from referees. Where if he steps out even a little bit, then it's a card.
I mean,
Jacques has the same thing.
I will always point to that red card that he got in the, I don't get that to this day.
Where his knee tapped the bottom of the cleat.
Yeah, and suddenly he gets a red card. And
wild. It was so wild. And that was the worst red card.
And
then
the funny thing about that, and not to digress too far, but the funny thing about that is now if that's the standard for red cards, there's like three red cards a game. And there's a lot of people that have defended it and they're like, that was the correct call. I'm like, sure. Cool. That's the correct call. Then there's three red cards a game. I could show you all the penalties and red card that happen because of that.
Yeah, every game is the Battle of Nuremberg.
Yeah. I'm a little worried about how Arsenal's gained that reputation. And I don't know where it comes from, really. It's not like Arsenal.
Oh, I do. I mean, Xhaka earns it. I don't think that refs should act on that bias, but I do think it is a little bit appropriate for them to look out for it.
Mm-hmm.
But in looking out for it, they should know that they shouldn't overstep and be too harsh on it, because that just perpetuates the same thing. And in the same way we had Luis, I think Gabriel is trying to earn it. Like, that dude is the king of shithouse, let me tell you. Oh my goodness! Just the little things that he does, mm-hmm. like that time he stepped on the penalty spot and got a yellow for it.
I love that, by the way.
Great yellow!
I'm here for that.
Great yellow. But he's there for all the little tackles and all the big tackles.
Yeah,
like he is there for that reputation. And I think that we do things to earn it.
Mm-hmm.
However, I think most teams do things like that.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think we're unique in that way.
Yeah, no. Yeah.
So other than that, what do you got for the rest of the game?
I just have a couple things. Let's see. I think just let's go to player specifics. Cedric, not good that game. Not terrible that game, but also not good that game. I think especially that the second goal, I don't want to be too harsh on him because there wasn't that much he could have done. Yeah. But it does start with him going way too out wide where Sokka should have gone.
Mm-hmm.
And then Sokka having to come in and cover. But in going out wide, he lets the cutback go too easy and doesn't come back inside to cover again. And that leads to the 1-2-3 pass that leads to the cutback, another cutback. And again, because our fullback is out of position, it means that our midfielders have to come back further, which means that Lacazette, of all people, has to cover that run. And Lacazette went in and covered a different midfielder's inside run and left what's his name? It starts with an M. I can't even pronounce. I'm not going to try and pronounce his name. And leaves him wide open to just shoot. Mwepu. Yeah, Mwepu. To be fair, we had the exact same chance and Sokka just skied it. 2 minutes before that. 2 minutes
happens.
Before that. He did the old party special. But That all starts with your fullback not playing well. Like, not like coming out, that's fine. You can trust Saka to come inside for you. But then the choice to just kind of lazily jog back while there's these 1-2-3 passes where you, like, you need to come back now, but, like, you're not doing anything.
Yeah.
Like, he was completely taken out of the play just with a drop pass. And that can't happen. Mm-hmm. Let's see. Odegaard, I think Odegaard does a lot of things. Not Odegaard, excuse me. ESR. Yeah. Emile Smith Rowe does so many things right. I think he's so full of energy. I think he is fantastic at pressing. I think he is very good most parts of the pitch. I think I cry every time he gets a one-on-one on the outside.
Yeah.
Because that boy cannot beat people. He's not fast enough. He's not tricky enough. He needs to be making second. He needs to be inside making secondary runs to connect with those mm-hmm. Crosses. He can't be the one outside. He either needs to learn how to do it, to just beat people and get a cross in, or he needs somebody else to do it for him so he can make that second or third run. He needs to be running in from midfield. He needs to be just watch how Aaron Ramsey played. Mm-hmm. Just play like him. Like that's all you have to do.
Well, I mean, I'm going to cleave in on your ESR talk, which is like you looked at him at the Palace game in which he was completely anonymous. Like he would like
yeah, he did nothing.
He did nothing that game, and then you have this game where he again wasn't great, and I don't know if where he's playing is necessarily his best role. Like that's my
oh no, that's a terrible place for him, especially if Martinelli's the one who's usually out there.
Mm-hmm.
I think because Martinelli, if you want somebody who can take people on, ooh, oh boy, yeah. That's who you want. You want like we were spoiled is what we were. Watching him just like. I'm pretty sure half of the right backs that he was against this year, I'm pretty sure they went home and cried. they went in that big ice bath and they just let out a bunch of tears because he made most of them look very bad. I mean, who did I say earlier in the Kyle Walker?
Yeah.
My man ran all around Kyle Walker. I mean, I know we lost that game 2-0, but man.
Yeah.
Made him look slow. It was great. I loved it. ESR, not that guy. Let's see. We have Xhaka. I already talked enough about Xhaka. Can we give Odegaard the captain?
I love Odegaard. I'm 100% sold on that man. Like he is amazing. His goal was great. What he does, like wherever you play him, whether it's like in that center midfielder or like being the attacking midfielder. I'm all about him.
I mean, I think I think he can be a little bit anonymous in games, but that's the same criticism we leveled against Ozil,
mm-hmm.
and I think that was also kind of harsh because the games that we say that about them is the games where we're just being run over and we're expecting them to keep. Like where we're like losing possession, we're losing chances. Like that's not what they're there to do. They're not there to stop that. They're there for when we do get possession back to
mm-hmm.
kind of grease those wheels. And I think that Odegaard can lose out in the same way, but also is way more aggressive and active in those areas in those times. So I think it's actually even sillier of a of a criticism because. He's good in those situations too. And then after he scores his goal, he's like, what it was, 87th yeah. minute was when they scored. He's still like pumping the crowd.
I love to see
the crowd who
love to see that
started to leave, by the way.
Yeah.
Like I gotta have a word with the people at the Emirates, like the fans at the Emirates, like can't leave.
Yeah. I mean, I've never had the pleasure of seeing an Arsenal game live, but I don't think I'd ever leave early.
Mm-mm.
And like far be it to me to judge people because you know you all have your hear different things or whatever. But yeah, it's not ideal.
Yeah, I was not happy seeing that. I know we said we were going to talk about that later, but I didn't like it. Let's see, who else is on my chopping block? I think that's it. I think Lekonga didn't play great. I don't think he played bad. I've already talked about our fullbacks. Who else was in this game? Pepe, I think, came on too late in the wrong place for us to do anything.
I feel like that should be the tagline for Pepe. Too late in the wrong place. Like that should be
too late in the wrong place. Man, he is real good in the Europa League. Yeah. I hope we make it to Europa League so he can shine again.
Indeed.
Who else? I do think it's a little bit. I think Odegaard actually can make that true number eight spot his own if he plays it more. I think right now trying to fit in all the boys, you know, Odegaard, Saka, Smith Rowe, and Martinelli, trying to fit them all in with Lacazette up front, and then also jam in Odegaard behind him. I don't think it really works with the six that we have, the Lekonga or with Partey. I don't think that they are as stable of a platform as we need in order for that to fully work. Unless we tell Smith Rowe to stay a little bit more. But that's not going to happen because...
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we do have to move on pretty soon. But I actually have a question. So, in a very short period, what do you think about Nketiah in this game?
Terrible! This game, he played great, actually. However, also missed his chances. We can cry all day that Lacazette doesn't take chances or score that often, but Lacazette also has a bunch of assists, and when we play Liverpool, then Klopp singled out one person when in his pregame talk, and it wasn't Saka and it wasn't Martinelli. He did mention our wingers were very dangerous, but what he mentioned was that Lacazette is everywhere. If the top coaches are mentioning Lacazette by name, then maybe Lacazette sucks 420 on Twitter doesn't really know that how good Lacazette is. I think we do need to sign a striker, but I don't think that Lacazette is failing in what we're asking him to do. And that brings me back to Nketiah. Nketiah is failing at what we're 100%. Asking him to do. Because when Nketiah comes in, he doesn't come in and we don't ask him to come back and retain possession. What we're asking Nketiah to do is to create and finish chances. Mm. And Nketiah does not create and finish chances.
Yeah, I mean, I in a lot of ways, I see Lacazette in the same way I see Giroud, which Giroud is another one of my favorite pet players that I think got way too much hate for what he was doing. It's just that same position. Yeah. And they're not necessarily meant to be scoring all the goals. They're meant to be creating and sitting in that position. We should move on because we could go on this forever. Before our break, though, do you want to say anything about the upcoming Southampton game?
I do. Southampton. This is the third and three trap games. Southampton just got stomped on by Chelsea, who themselves got stomped on by Madrid, right? Like the game before, they got whooped 3-1 by Madrid, or 3-0.
It was 3-1, and then they almost made it back, but then got stomped on again.
So I think Southampton does this thing every year, pretty much, where they play against another top six team that top five. Take away that sixth one, Tottenham isn't top.
No.
They play another top five team who has been struggling and it's like the Stella got my groove back for Chelsea, right? Like they just run all over Southampton. Southampton's the punching bag, and then look at the next game for Southampton is Arsenal, and they have a lot to prove. And then they play against us, and they come out like nobody thought they could, because it's a freaking Disney Channel movie for some reason. Always against Arsenal, Southampton. Southampton and Crystal Palace always come out against Arsenal.
Yeah.
So we could drop more points.
Yeah, I'm not super as confident as I would be. I have a lot of time of day for Arsene Tuchel, the coach for Southampton. Yeah. I think he's a good coach. I think you're exactly right, which is like last year I think they lost two games by like more than six goals. Like it was Southampton has this in them. I think they're going to have a response. I don't think they're a trash team. I think it's going to be a difficult game.
Yeah. I do think that they are worse than they have been. I just don't think that they have the players right now to really be super threatening. But again, neither does Brighton.
Yeah. And to me, at the end of the day, again, I'm going to, you know, put my neck out here because I'm going to probably have this podcast next week where I excuse an Arsenal loss. But what I'm going to say is that Arsenal should win this game. You should be getting these 3 points. We can make excuses for it. You can talk about Hassan Huthul and like whatever. But if you're serious about, you know, moving up on the table, if you're serious about getting that fourth spot and playing in Champions League, I mean, this is going to sound harsh, but if you can't beat Southampton, there's no reason you should be in the Champions League, to be honest.
That's fair. That's 100% fair.
All right. I think we're going to take a break after this and then come back and answer your questions. All right, everybody, welcome back from the break. Now it's time for questions and comments segment of the show. And we have a fun question from usual host who's somewhere in the wilds of Montana, which I can't wait to hear stories. If he doesn't bring back like a boar or like a moose skin, I'm going to be disappointed. It's our normal host, Caleb, who asks, why is Xhaka the right or wrong choice at left back over Tavares?
I think I accidentally answered this, yeah?
Yeah, but let's recap it.
Yeah, so I think Xhaka doesn't know positionally what to do as a left back. I mean, in general, I think he did fine, but in very specific instances, he was caught out. He's not fast enough to recover when he is caught out like that. And, I mean, that's basically it. He doesn't have the speed or the know-how to be the left back over Tavares. And I think Tavares beats him on both of those things. Tavares is an out and out left back, where Xhaka is somebody obviously covering for a left back.
Yeah. I mean, like, sorry.
No, I'm just clearing my throat. Sorry.
No, I was shocked to see him taking up left back positions, because I understand when you put him back to center back. Like, I get it. Like, it's not that far of a step to be in a defensive midfielder to a center back. But then to, like, put that to a left back position is, I think, a step too far, and it's not surprising. Like, to be honest, it was kind of his fault for being out of position, but I don't blame him for being out of position, because he doesn't know, it's not what he's used to.
Yeah, I mean, at a certain point, that's a tricky thing, because you have both arguments are pretty reasonable, where on the one hand, he is out of position, and he how could he know where to be? But on the other hand, he also is a very experienced professional soccer player. And there's not like really that much you need to know. There's but But again, like that kind of thing has to be, you have to know it so well. It's muscle memory in order to perform at that level. And it's not obviously for him. I don't think it's like necessarily that far of a stretch. As a center midfielder in the modern game, you do cover for fullbacks more often than you do for center backs, because their fullbacks will go forward, and then in order for you to keep that balance defensively, then you usually have your center midfielder on that side if you're playing a 4-2-3-1 or a 4-3-3 like we do. You have your center midfielder cover that left back position. That's defensively. So when we're pressing the way we do, then he's never in that position. He's never in that position while we are pressing that way. And so he's not going to have the experience to tell him not to move forward, which leads to the goal. So I think it's a bit harsh, but I don't think he should be there.
I always thought that when you're playing when you have the backs running up and you had a center midfielder, the center midfielder would drop into the center back position, and then whatever center back would go to the back position. That's always how
You do that when the other team has already gone past you.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're just rearranging the shapes, because that's and preemptively doing it, then the center midfielder goes out. Okay. And it depends. This is why I don't think kind of what I was saying, like you can't play Moneyball. And I would, my players would get really mad at me when I was coaching, and I coached high schoolers. So they wanted when this happens, what do I do? And I would be like, well, it depends. they all throw popcorn at me. It does depend the state of the game, right? So if the winger is out there, if the opposing winger is out on your left and they beat your left back, then the center back goes out and then the center midfielder comes in.
Mm-hmm.
If we have the ball and the left back goes forward, then one of the center midfielders in the 4-2-3-1, one of the center midfielders slides in to be the lone center midfielder, and the other one slides in to be the left back. And that way you keep your shape and you keep a drop pass, but then you also keep your two center backs active. But that's a tangent. Xhaka, I think, is good in that phase. He's not good. He's never been good. This is where he gets all his red cards, is in when the other team's in transition.
Mm-hmm.
He's terrible in that phase. He's terrible like chasing somebody back.
Mm-hmm.
Because he usually gets beat, and when he gets beat, then he fouls them, and then it's always a yellow card because it's a tactical foul, and then he does that twice in a game and he gets sent off. How Xhaka gets sent off all the time. Or he karate chops somebody in the throat, but
that's a whole nother. But I mean, like, going back to the spirit of the question, like, is Xhaka as a back better than our backup backs?
I don't think so. I think Xhaka is more, because in that game, right, that because he knows how to go back, slide into that position to cover in the circumstance that I said, mm-hmm. it's much more likely that goal doesn't happen if Tavares goes up too far, because Xhaka would have seen that he went up too far and went back to cover. Whereas we have Lokonga and Odegaard, and neither of them are experienced in that role, and neither of them are as defensively minded or structure like positionally minded. Not in their own position, but in the whole team. They don't follow the full team shape the way that Xhaka does. And so if Tavares was there and Xhaka was in the middle, Tavares goes too far forward trying to help the press, and Xhaka would have come back because there's nobody to press in the midfield that Lokonga or Odegaard wouldn't have been pressing. So Xhaka would have been there covering. So I don't think that goal happens if we put in Tavares and leave Xhaka in the middle. That's all to say, Tavares is also better at the aspects of the game. He's better at going forward. He's better at recovering. And those are the two things that we needed in that game. It was, we needed more options out wide, and we needed somebody to cover faster on Brighton's transitions.
So where they hit us. What you're saying is that maybe we should play players at the positions that they're used to.
Oh yeah, that too. Yeah,
that would be crazy, right?
Yeah, and that's just tactically. I think this is also like a pretty big failure on Arteta. I'm not an Arteta out person in the least. Yeah. I think in general he's doing a really good job. But in this specific instance, he did fail both tactically and on a man management aspect. I think it's really bad for Tavares. I think it's the old adage, like if you fall off a horse, you have to get back on.
Mm-hmm.
Like you didn't give him the opportunity to get back on the horse. You yanked him at halftime against a game where he was set up to fail. And then in a game where it would have been easier for him and we actually needed him more, you didn't let him play. And like I said, at length a little bit in the beginning, maybe that was partly with Tavares too. But like maybe he felt it out and Tavares didn't seem ready. But I don't think going forward it's going to be hard, especially, you know, Tierney's not going to be back for a while. So this is actually going to be a problem because Southampton is going to be a game and then we have Chelsea. So, I mean, who's he going to be up against in Chelsea? Are we going to have Xhaka go up against Timo Werner?
No, thank you.
Or are we going to have Tavares, whose spirit is broken, go against Timo Werner?
I mean,
like that. Neither of those sound like good options. But yeah. If he played against Brighton and he had a good game, then that sounds like a good option to me. And he kind of got his groove back. Maybe we're going to do it this time against Southampton. Maybe we're going to be Stella finally against Southampton.
I think we've figured out the name for the podcast, which is Arsenal getting its groove back. But
I think that covers that question, unless you have something to say.
I think we should move on to their next question.
Yeah, okay. This next question is from Granil Misquith. If I butchered your name, I'm so very sorry. I'm just filling in. If Arsenal does finish fifth or sixth, do we still consider it a good season based on where we started? Hoping we finish fourth, fingers crossed.
I mean, yes, fingers crossed finishing fourth would be amazing. I don't think we're technically eliminated from winning the title. We could still win the title if everybody loses and we win everything.
Stop with this. Stop. No. I mean, I guess technically, yeah. If City and Liverpool and Chelsea lose out.
Yeah. But I go back because this is a fairly easy question for me because I'm actually on recorded record answering this question, which is we had a where your goals for the start of the season. I had eighth as a minimum goal, Europe as a good goal, and fourth as a stretch goal, as it were. So for me, it's pretty easy that like, yeah, it'd be awesome if we finished fourth and we're in the Champions League. If we're in Europe, I'm happy. If we're above eighth, I don't think it's a horrible season. And that's where we need to remember, because coming off of last season, we have to remember where we were last season, where we were in the relegation zone last season. Remember this. Like, we were in a very bad spot. This is a building year, and I think next year is going to get better. I think we're going to strengthen in the next window. I think there's a lot of things. I think it's exciting that we've been getting this close to fourth, because it's been, you know, 2 or 3 years since we've been so close to getting fourth. So, yeah, I mean, like, in a long-term perspective, I think I'm not going to be disappointed if we get fifth or sixth.
here's a question for you to add on to this question.
Mm-hmm.
What, and I, let's, I'm going to read the second part of Grinnell's question because, it kind of, is the same vein as mine. What positions, this is Grinnell, what positions would need to be strengthened seeing how thin our squad is with one or two injuries derailing the entire season? Plus, if we do play in Europe next season, we need a lot of good players and not just bodies. So, that being said, how does it affect our transfer window in the summer if we're in fourth compared to if we're in fifth or sixth? Like, who do we get in to go to the Champions League instead of going to Europa League?
I mean, I think, like, so for me, the glaring need is a scoring striker. And this is not, like, a slight towards Lacazette or anything, but we do need a striker that scores goals. And obviously Nketiah is not the answer, and he's going to be leaving at the end of the year anyways.
Thank God.
Yeah. And so I think if you're in the Champions League, you can start looking at players like Isak. I know I talk about Isak a lot. He's a Swedish striker that I rate.
Wait, who?
Isak.
I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding.
Yeah. But like, even if it's not Isak, a player of that caliber and of that marquee, you can get if you get in the Champions League. Whereas I think if you're in fifth or sixth, you don't necessarily get that type of player. I mean, to be honest, as far as depth, I think you need depth over the entire field except for goalkeeper, because I think right now we have, you know, it's Ramsdale and Leno, and I think that's a fairly deep...
Wait, no, we have a...
Runarsson?
What's that guy's name? No, we have...
The Colorado...
The American.
Oh, God, he's not going to be good.
No, he's from New England.
Oh, yeah, he is New England. He's not going to be good, and I've already forgotten him. Madison? No.
No. And Matt is
anyways, keepers, no one cares.
He's the national team. He's the national team keeper.
Nah, no, Stefan's the national team keeper. But yeah, I'm not too worried about keeper. But like, as far as depth, every position needs depth. I think we could benefit from everywhere. The thing is, I think our defense, as far as the first stringers go, is top notch. So I'm not as worried. I would think, you know, if God, what is his name? French guy that went on loan, Saliba.
Oh, Saliba, yeah.
Saliba, if he comes through and actually comes through, like, we have some depth in that area. I would like a little bit more depth in center midfield, because if Partey goes down, it seems like the world ends. But, like, for me, like, I feel like it's like a front to back is my priority level, which is like, we need if we're going to invest all our money, it has to be a striker, and then we just kind of go back from there.
Okay. Let me pose a scenario for you.
Yeah.
Say we sign, okay, two scenarios. Oh. We sign a striker.
Mm-hmm.
We don't sign a center midfielder.
Mm-hmm.
And the striker scores some goals, but Partey is injured the entire year, and we're relying on Lokonga, Elneny, Xhaka, and Odegaard in the middle. Or
mm-hmm.
we sign Laka to a 1-year deal. We move Martinelli up to a 9 most of the time, and we kind of have Xhaka or Laka and Martinelli up there along with, you know, the scoring wingers that we have, and then we sign a really good backup or even like a replacement for Xhaka, right? So in those two scenarios, so we either sign a good pair for Partey or even depth for Partey, or we sign a striker. Which you still think that the striker is kind of like net gain for us, or is net better for us?
I do. I mean, I know you're setting me up for this. Like, I know you have an answer.
No.
But I will say that, I mean, this is all dependent on quality of striker versus quality of center midfield. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. It's a, but I actually still believe in the Conga, and I still think he's a developing player that I think in the next 1 to 2 years could actually could be an amazing partner to Partey. The injured part of Partey, like, sure. Like, if he's injured all year, I think we could be screwed. But I'm actually very wary of signing Lacazette for even another year. He's on the back end of his life, and it's something that Wenger has always said, is like, a player over 32 is only going down. Like, you could have,
I mean, he just turned 30.
I still think, like, it's a very risky, risky move. Like, even a one-year contract, which I don't even think Lacazette would sign, to be honest. I think it's a very risky thing, especially because you need the goals to happen somewhere. And, yeah, we have some very promising midfielders, but it's not like they're lighting up the goals right now.
Right.
And I don't know. I see where you're going, which is that, you know, if we could replace, if we could upgrade Xhaka,
yeah,
I think we'd be doing well. But in some ways, I think Odegaard is an upgrade for Xhaka. Does that make sense?
No. Yes. No. It does. It does. What I want to see as an experiment, maybe not right now because I do want to go higher in the league, is Smith Rowe.
Okay.
Next to Lokonga, and then Odegaard stay up.
Okay.
I think that would provide a little bit more balance. I think one of the underrated aspects to Smith Rowe's game is he's really aggressive winning balls back.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's, like, amazing at just ball winning. And so having him back there next to Lokonga, I think, would be, like, pretty good. It could suck just because he would be I don't think he plays safe enough. I think he would try things like he was in the final third, and then leave us a little bit exposed. But, I mean, that can be coached out, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Trying to stay to this question though, I think that our depth up front, besides an actual striker or center forward, is pretty good. I think our wingers are really good. I think we can rotate between Pepe, Saka, Odegaard, ESR, Martinelli. I think we have pretty good rotation for the what is it? It's a 7, 10, and 11 slots. I think that we obviously need to sign a 9,
yes,
whether that is a center forward that's going to hold up like Lacazette does now, or just an out-and-out striker. We probably need both just so that we have options. And we need at least the striker. We need the goal scorer to be a good goal scorer if we're going to move up from where we are. Because I think that's the biggest ask. Even if it's one of our biggest needs, I think that's the biggest ask for the transfer window without paying Buco bucks. And if we're paying Buco bucks, might as well go for Haaland, right?
I was just going to ask you, because friend of the show and good friend of mine, Jordan, who listens to this all the time, still thinks that, like, we're in the Haaland sweepstakes. Do you think that's out of the...
Yeah, why not? Why not?
All right.
We have a lot of money to spend. I mean, not like... We don't have, like Newcastle money to spend, but we have money to spend. And, you know, Odegaard. He's gotta have some kind of pull on him, right?
Well, I mean, Odegaard's, oh yeah, the Norwegian connection. I was gonna,
yeah. My only thing is that I think Pep over at City, I think he really, really wants a striker.
Yeah.
I think that he's real salty that he didn't get Kane. And that he's stuck with just Jesus. I think he really wants. Oh, it's not Jesus. He's Portuguese. He's Brazilian, so it's Jesus.
Yeah.
I think he really, and I think Haaland or Mbappe are like who he wants. I don't think he will take anybody but those two.
So, seeing as this player is definitely going to move in the next offseason, Kane?
I mean, maybe it's depth, I guess.
Yeah. Maybe if we do that
1 year that 1 year deal for Laka, then maybe, you know, to bring off the bench the two times we play against
Tottenham. Oh, that'd be amazing.
And have him just ride Pine the rest of the season. That is my dream.
I hate Kane. This is a separate conversation, but I do hate Kane.
He's so dirty. He is. He's a like that whole like back into the defender while you're both going up. Ugh. I'm surprised no one's gotten more hurt.
Well, I mean, and it's he doesn't get called for it because he's English striker captain dude.
Yeah, I know. Ugh. Yeah, I mean, and he looks it too. He has the most English face I've ever seen in all of them.
Well, he has
I apologize to all of your English.
I know we do actually have a few English listeners and.
But I mean, like in like the worst Brexity way, you know, like all those guys yelling about Brexit, they all look like an older Harry Kane.
You know what Kane has for me is it's a German phrase, and I should look this up before I talk about it. But it means it is a phrase that is a face that needs to be punched.
I mean, it looks like it's been punched a couple times.
Flap for me for just a second.
Yeah, I will. I mean, but it would be pretty great. Just like he doesn't do anything all season long, comes on, scores a double against Tottenham, and then just doesn't do anything the rest of the I would love that. That would make my year.
I'm not fine. It's there is a German phrase, and I'm not finding it in my quick Google search. But it is a face that needs to be punched. And yeah, Kane has it.
You know what you should do is you should find it and then put it in the Discord.
Yes.
Then people have to look at the Discord.
Speaking of Discord, it's probably time to wrap up unless you have anything else. We're actually 20 minutes over what we usually talk about, so.
I'm so sorry.
No, it's been a wonderful time. I love having you on. I'm sure we'll have you on again. And but yeah, I'm going to start doing the wrap-up thing, which means I normally Caleb does this, so I have to like actually go back and read all these things. But speaking of Discord, you should join our Discord if you haven't already. But first, I would like to thank you, Jonathan, for coming in and hosting the show. And
thank you for having
me. Yeah, of course. And thank you all listeners for listening to this episode. If you like this episode, if you like what we're doing, you should review and subscribe. Believe it or not, it really does help us to have that. You should look at us at Twitter at West of North London. I'm banned from Twitter, so I don't follow that, but Caleb does all that.
Wait, hold on. I need more than 3 Twitter followers, so you can also follow JK Monillas.
Oh.
That's JK Monillas.
Oh, yes, please do. He's a fun follow on all the other social networks that I'm allowed to be on. So I imagine Twitter is awesome. So what was it again?
Just at JK Monillas. Monillas is my last name. Sorry, it's so hard to pronounce. Monillas.
I believe you told us to pronounce it Mo-nil-ass.
No, it's Monillas. Like you want more of those little wafers.
Okay.
Monillas. Yeah.
All right. Continue.
No, I'm done.
All right. And if you made it this far, if you want to email us, please email us at westofnorthlondon@gmail.com. I'm not going to spell it out. And please send us a voicemail. I love to have more voicemails. I think we should put this at the beginning of the thing so we could get more voicemails. And that is at I'm going to put it at the back of the thing because I cannot do this, but yeah, there'll be a link at the bottom of this to send us a message. Also, join our Discord. That was on the notes. We should thank Bobcat, which is an amazing pop punk band. I think they're starting to play again. So if you're in the Seattle area, look out for Bobcat. They are fun pop punk. And they are bobc.at. Check out their albums. They have a couple albums on there. I think if you follow this podcast, you'll probably really like them. And, ooh, I'm going to do this to you. That's us for this week. And as always,
see you at the next gun show.